today on Kubin Radio.
Hey everybody, Code Pen Radio number 194. Wasn't sure what title this one. You'll know and I don't know as I'm recording this. I kind of put GraphQL in the title of it because that's kind of a technology we've been talking a lot about and using here at Code Pen. But really, it's like just comes with React. It's like Reactin' friends. It's like nobody ever just works in React. It's always React plus a bunch of buddies, I feel like. And so our stack, you know, maybe you'll know this if you're a longtime listener of the podcast or a CodePen fan of some kind, that we decided to use React at CodePen to build new things. So like all of CodePen isn't React, and it still isn't that way. But we chose that when we went with projects. And the lead of that whole project was Rachel. Rachel's here. Hey, Rachel.
Hi.
And, you know, so we built all of projects with React and now some more parts of the site. But still, projects is probably the biggest thing on CodePen that's React, isn't that right?
Definitely.
Yeah. That was a big thing. We were kind of learning it. And we went with Redux as well because Redux is state management and we just have a whole heck of a lot of state. And I'd say that's probably why we chose to go with that stack at all, is because it's just like, holy cow, state management is tricky and hard, especially on an app like CodePen. Let's use some kind of global store for our state to handle that for us. And we chose Redux for that. And we chose Immutable too. I think that was just kind of like Immutable makes things fast. Do you remember why we chose that? Was that the long and short of it?
Yeah, it was specifically because we had a situation where we have some state, which is your project files, and that's kind of like a big array of objects, and we needed a way to very quickly compare the previous state of those objects to the next state. And doing that with just native JavaScript objects is quite slow. And Immutable allows you to sort of do this like quick comparison between data structures. And that's why we brought it in.
Fascinating. So it was literally like, because somebody might have 200 files in their project or whatever, and that in our state, it's not, you know, it looks just like a file system, but we like replicate that in state. It's like faked or whatever. And so like that's a massive JavaScript object full of stuff. And that was the piece of state that was the biggest problem.
Yeah, that was, I can't remember the particulars of exactly what we were doing and why, but I do remember we were running into a situation where, you know, there was a need to know essentially if there's a difference between, you know, those, the files before and files after. And once you get into comparing these big data structures, and then even the files themselves had like many different, properties on them that needed to be compared, we just needed to bring Immutable in. And a lot of people will choose Immutable when they're dealing with Redux just because, Redux, you're required to write reducers where you do not mutate the state, and Immutable gives you the ability to quickly sort of do that, like reproduce some existing state with different functions, and it will always provide a new version. It will not mutate the state. So that's a benefit of Immutable.
You'd say it's immutable.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's... You know, so it's React and friends. It's, you know, when we build projects, it's React and Redux and Immutable and Webpack and Webpacker and all, you know, all these things that go with that stack. There's probably a dozen more things that probably, if we wanted to get minute and mention all of that stuff. And that was fun. And we definitely, I would say, don't regret it. That was a great way to build what we're building, and it probably would be a great way to build the entirety of CodePen, because there's just so much good about it, all that state management. And it, rare is the day where we actually have a bug that's just like that's related to a Dom screwing up of something, like the event handler wasn't detached right or something. Like that stuff just doesn't happen that much in React, if ever. And I don't feel like it's just been, it was awesome. And so we decided, okay, well, you know, anytime we rebuild the area of the site, we'll do it in that. And anytime we build out something new, we'll do it in that stack. And then occasionally we'll rewrite areas of the site. And then eventually we'll just move our whole stack over to a new thing. I mean, it's common to any company. When you rewrite an app, it's often not wholesale. You don't have time for that. It's not practical business-wise or tech-wise or smart even. You wouldn't want to just roll out an entirely rewritten version of your app. It's better to dip your toes here and there and do stuff like that. So that's where we're at. I'd say we're a React shop to some degree, but we're, you know, the entirety of our app isn't there. So when we go to hire new developers, it's nice if they already know React. Certainly, it would be like a somewhat of a requirement of a new front-end developer at CodePen that you're at least comfortable with the idea that we work in React. Enter Cassidy. Cassidy's here too. Hey, Cassidy.
Hello.
And you are certainly not afraid of React and probably even liked the idea that we are
React-driven. Yeah, I was here. Excited.
Yeah. Cool. And so, gosh, how do I morph that into today? At some point, we decided we're going to be building more stuff for the site. In fact, you know, there's stuff in development right now, you know, all kinds of different things. And we decided that we're going to keep doing what we're doing. Anything that's new that we're adding to the site and changing in a significant way is going to be built in React. So now we're starting to touch pages that are kind of like half and half. Like we're not even going to write the whole page in React. But if there's a new significant component, it will be React on the page. But I guess it was Alex. Somebody got a bee in their bonnet that is that metaphor? Work worldwide? My mom would say
That works. It's fine.
Good. That instead of, I guess it wasn't immediately obvious, but it became obvious soon that we're going to not use Redux, but we're instead going to use this technology called GraphQL that I mentioned at the top, and I guess a library on top of it called Apollo. And it wasn't immediately obvious to me, like, why are these? I mean, I know that Redux is state management, but GraphQL is not. It's just a query language for asking for data. Like, how is that the same? You'd think you'd use GraphQL to query and then you'd put it in some kind of state management thing. But I guess that's where Apollo comes in that it's kind of both. Like, yes, GraphQL is the language that you do the query with, but then you like put it in I still like struggle to explain it very clearly. So maybe I'll pass it off to Rachel. It seems like we're all pretty on board with this GraphQL thing, right? We're pretty far down that.
Yeah. I mean, the reason to bring GraphQL in, I think, was more to do with the fact that it was appealing from an API perspective, because our REST API is that we use internally. It's not public or anything. It was grown into this sort of monolith, and like every time you made a page for React, you had to build a new endpoint on Rails and then take what used to be data, put in Rails views and convert that into sort of a serializer, which is a class type in Rails that will essentially spit out some JSON for you. That whole process was a bit cumbersome. It took a while. And then also you sort of had to like massage the data into this format that the front end could use. And then even if it didn't get there, the front end would then require some JavaScript to further transform that data into a way that the client was able to use it. And there was just like a lot of data manipulation. Once we made an API and a JSON response, it sort of was a bit stuck there. We weren't that free to change it. It also meant you
So it's REST, but like REST plus, like bring your own REST.
It was like REST customized for us on our particular needs on each page. You had to build a payload that made sense for that page or that component. And it was just, a lot of work. And I think the appeal of GraphQL is that it sort of simplifies things a little bit as far as like being able on the client side to construct your data in a way that your request in a way that suits you. So on the back end, you don't need these different endpoints. You have just one GraphQL endpoint and it can provide literally everything if you need it. But the client is able to just say, hey, I just want this and that. And that's kind of the beauty of GraphQL. It saves us like having to write all these custom JSON structures for different endpoints to suit different pages, especially when we're in a world of you're on dashboard page and you need this specific, you know, response for this page for the React stuff to work. And it was just, it was just getting a bit much. And then the added benefit of using Apollo. So it's kind of confusing for people, but GraphQL is the technology, and Facebook originally created the technology, open source, and that is basically the protocol that you use for querying a backend of any kind. And GraphQL is this sort of layer between your backend and your front end that it's a syntax and it's a way to interact with a database of some kind. And then Apollo is a product and also a company. So a company called Apollo has made a product called Apollo GraphQL, and that is also an open source product. And it is there is a client side component to that called Apollo GraphQL Client, which is the client side JavaScript library, I guess you could say. I'm not sure if it's a framework or a library. It's hard to distinguish sometimes. But and that will sit in with work with your React and provide you all the client-side code. It's kind of like a JavaScript SDK that lets you interact with your GraphQL backend that you have set up, your GraphQL API.
It sounds like a lot of moving parts, but it's really not that big of a deal, right? You at the top of your components, you just pull in this query component that Apollo gives you.
Yes.
I'm sure there's some setup prior to this, but for me, for a front-end developer, I just import that query library. In fact, we wrote a little wrapper around it, but we don't have to get into that. And then in your JSX, you just have this angle bracket query component, which takes a GraphQL query, which you define at the, this is what's beautiful when you're looking at a component. At the top of your component, there's like, what are the template literals, I guess, around this GraphQL query. If you've never seen a GraphQL query, it looks a little bit like JSON, but with no values. It's just the properties, no commas or anything. It's just words with white space and curly brackets sometimes to go down the levels. So if I want a list of pens, I can just say like pens, give me 10 of them and make sure you give me their title and their ID and how many hearts they have or something like that. I'm just thinking of CodePen data that we have. And then that query component, as soon as it has that data from GraphQL, then it will render inside of it. It's just as syntactically, it's really clean and nice.
It's so much cleaner than Redux too. And I've never been a huge fan of Redux, but especially now that we're using Apollo, I can say that a little bit more freely and not hide behind this this thing where people are so into Redux. And I was just like, no, I don't like it. But it's so nice to be able to just write React and not have to worry about actions and passing things to reducers and kind of just getting to write your component, and then your component has its own data, and that's all you have to worry about. And that part is so, so nice, because especially as we're working with projects, which is very Redux-y, getting to be able to convert some of the stuff in there just to Apollo, it feels like you're kind of just releasing the components to be their own adults, for lack of a better word. It's not chained to this Redux state.
They don't require a container. There's no container required. They can just live their lives.
It's just so beautifully modular. I love it.
Yeah. The major advantage over that I've seen over using Apollo is the reason, because, you know, you don't undertake the decision lightly to be all in on Redux for 2 years and then go, oh, no, we're going to do it this way now. Because there is a there is a cost to that. There's developers getting up to speed. There's this situation now where we go to reuse a component, but it's all hooked into Redux data, so we have to spend time rewriting it. And that's, you know, that's rewriting time, which is you end up with the same result at the end. As far as the users are concerned, like, the, nothing's new happens to this component. I've just spent 2 hours on it, and it does exactly the same things before. There's no improvement from their perspective. So you have to, you know, be really, really sure you want to make a change like this. And the reason I was convinced was because with projects and with Redux, and this is all that was available to us 2 years ago, like this Apollo stuff didn't really exist, especially not the Apollo client side library. Basically, we had to do all the network management ourselves. So we had a version, a client version of the state, and a server version of the state, which was keeping track of how things worked on the server. Because when you're interacting with the server, there's all these different pieces of data that could, the server request could fail at any point, and then your client is out of sync with your server state, and there's, you know, a lot of behavior that has to happen when that happens. And we had to write all that ourselves and keep track of those two states ourselves. So that's what we needed Redux for, is this sort of, there's a lot of state to track in the project editor. And the nice thing about Apollo is, like, you don't have to write any of this networking stuff yourself anymore because it's built in. So you'll write a query component, as Chris is saying, and then it has built in, methods that if it fails, that you can tell it to do something else, you know, or if it succeeds, you can tell it to do something, and that the state itself is within the component is like Apollo is keeping track of that, you know, whether your client change was successful on the server, and, you know, if there's a difference between the two and that sort of thing, and that's all handled within the Apollo library. So the need to track incoming and outgoing requests and whether they failed or succeeded is completely obliterated. And that was like, that was a lot of code in projects. So it's nice to just forget about having to write that now as developers.
I feel like if you asked everybody at CodePen, they'd have a different reason why they like it in some way. I feel like Alex's answer is somewhat similar perhaps, but he was compelled for other reasons. And I certainly was no Redux fan. Cassidy isn't either. So it's nice to be able to skip that. That I was only, you know, I guess it was telling when the fact that is whenever I had to jump into that code, I basically had to pair with Rachel and she would re-explain it to me. And then we would get the thing done. And then I wouldn't touch it for a few weeks or whatever. And then I'd have to make another change and be like, well, I guess I better wait for Rach because I don't get it again. You know, that the learning curve, and that's just telling as me of being not particularly like up on this word and just not being the world's greatest developer, but still.
You are the world's greatest developer, Chris.
I don't know if he's the world's greatest, but he...
But Redux just never clicked with me. Like, if I had to jump in and write a container component right now, no way. I would just fail.
Yeah, I'd have to have the documentation open or something. It's
sure.
Not,
I mean, if
intuitive.
I had all day and it was all I had to do, maybe. But this is much faster.
That was me. So that's what I did. I was, I found it pretty, I mean, Redux is like, I never had any problems understanding the mental model of it. But almost everyone on the team did. Besides me, I feel like
I would say that's
when
true.
We first brought it in.
It's not that this Apollo world doesn't have its own complications and weirdnesses, because it totally does. But it is simpler. And my favorite thing about it is how empowering it is for me. Because at this point, we're getting pretty close to having all the data available that you'd want out of GraphQL, because there's certainly some slowness there too. You could be like, oh, but I need this from GraphQL, and our GraphQL wasn't yet configured to cough that out. So that's a similar situation than REST.
Yeah, we're still building out our API.
When you're building it out, yeah. But at some point that it gets kind of close to done, and then you're just all powerful. I feel way more powerful than I ever have on our front end, because I can just be like, I need this data, boom, I got it. I just write the query for it, and I can have it. And it's just incredible right. That way. I don't have to ask anybody. It just allows front end to just move faster, I think. That's a... you know, for better or worse. And I know that's on Alex's mind. It's this like kind of empowering front-end developers to move faster and do more. It's great. This episode of CodePen Radio is brought to you by WordPress.com. I bet a lot of you know the difference between the two WordPresses. Kind of. There's WordPress.org, the self-install open source version of WordPress, which is just wonderful. I've been using it forever. The CodePen blog is hosted with it and all that. Bring your own hosting, though, kind of. WordPress.com is that. It is still WordPress. It's just it's hosted and it's just fully managed for you. It's just a heck of a lot easier to get started with. Between the two of them, WordPress powers like a third of the internet, which is just incredible. You know, it just goes to show how powerful and long-living and flexible and just there for the people WordPress is. So this is one thing I've learned after like, most of my life being in the world of web design and development. It's kind of evaluating what you want to DIY and what you don't, with a heavy leaning towards stuff that you don't. You don't build everything from scratch these days. We're leaning on a million shoulders already. And I just think that's the smart thing to do. Like, if you can outsource it, do outsource it. And that's my big message, I think, for the world, for WordPress.com. It really boils down to, like, if you can host it on WordPress.com, you should host it on WordPress.com. All these sites out there that I really wish were just there so that they weren't dealing with hosting and domains and SSL and all the pain that can come with that. There's nothing wrong with knowing that stuff and managing it yourself if you should and whatnot. But if it's like, you know, your bakery website or this conference website, or you're selling scarves online, or there's just a million like types of websites, your travel journal, your personal site, you just want a blog, you know, just like get it on WordPress.com where it's going to be safe. You're going to have still tons of control and tons of power. It's going to be super fast. All this stuff is taken care of for you. Please do that when you can so that you don't, it's not abandoned. It's not causing you headaches and pain and incredible technical debt and all that stuff. Just use WordPress. It's an incredible platform. You have tons of power there still, and only like graduate beyond that and do more custom DIY stuff if you have to. Anyway, WordPress is awesome. Check out WordPress.com. Okay, React and friends. We moved to this GraphQL stack with Apollo, and everybody's is liking it to some degree. There are these components that live by themselves in this cool way, and it's, you know, it's clicking with our brains, and there's no containers and stuff like that. We are now, I should like, I don't know, this is like almost public service warning, going to be in like an awkward, you know, middle age stage at CodePen where we are on some pages loading this new world of React and Apollo and friends. And our old world, like there still might be a component that's rendered by Rails and has jQuery click handlers on it and stuff. That's not ideal. It's not the end of the world, really. We just make sure our jQuery like click handlers and stuff are event delegated to the body so that React like won't interfere them with them or is free to re-render them as needed. And it will kind of be okay.
It's like a breakup. We're just letting jQuery slowly move out while the new React slowly moves in.
And sure. And there's some pain there, just not for the world, but just because now we're loading two major JavaScript libraries at every page. We sometimes joke about it, though, because, gosh, you're browsing CodePen and you're looking at six live iframes of pens. There's a good chance that those six pens all added up together are 10 times bigger than the CodePen app itself. So we're not trying to totally excuse ourselves from the web performance conversation, but...
what budget?
Yeah, what... but it's close. And for some reason, we aren't using Immutable either in this world. Maybe we will. Maybe we'll have to use something when we get... if we start rewriting projects this way or whatever, but I don't know. I don't know if we will.
Yeah.
I don't understand enough to know why we wouldn't.
The main reason we used Immutable is to help us out with that, you know, having that comparison between server and client state and managing state that way. And because the way GraphQL is set up, we don't have to be comparing, you know, big objects anymore. So that's why we haven't felt the need to bring it in. It's still very much alive and well projects, because projects is a big JavaScript app, and it will be probably a long time before it's like fully fully converted over to GraphQL. And we're not tackling this in a way that, like, all right, we're in on GraphQL now. Like, let's just rewrite everything we did on projects the last 2 years and spend 6 months doing that. That's not what we're doing. Right. It's when we, you know, run into, we need to reuse a component from that project somewhere else on the site. We're like, okay, let's take this time to make it reusable and GraphQL based, and then whack it back in the projects in its new form.
So another concern here is that not only are there some pages that are shipping a lot of JavaScript because it's shipping old and new together, etc., we also don't have a massive opportunity here to like code split, I believe is the correct terminology, because it's not that we only make one pack and we just ship it on every page. We still try to be intelligent about making sub packs when we can. A pack being like a combination of JavaScript that's just mostly relevant to the page that you're on. But it's, you know, we can't, you know, I think in the super modern JavaScript world, they're incredible at it. And they know that at this particular route on this particular application, this is the only stuff that this page needs. And it just loads the very smallest amount of JavaScript that it can. We're not quite there yet. Of course, we're interested in that. And that's a fantastic way for people to be building apps. CodePen deserves to be totally written in React, and it'd be great to get there one day and be doing this, but we're just not there.
Yeah, that's the goal, to be able to like dynamically load scripts based on, you know, the way you interact with the app.
I want to be an SPA.
But that's very much SPA style. We're not quite there because we just have different pages that require different packs, and then the code splitting part gets a little bit hairy. If we were just shipping one JavaScript like SPA file, which then dynamically loaded things, that's kind of what we want to move towards. That's the end goal, because it's a lot more efficient.
Yeah, it's just, you know, go ahead and look at our routes.rb file and then keep dreaming, you know. It's just like the file's friggin' massive. It's complicated, and we aren't entirely, you know, What problems are we going to run to? We don't even know yet. Although it's fun as we build out new little sub areas of the site. Like I think this week, I hopefully get to start working on a new design for our challenges thing. You might even see the new design already, but we just for time reasons and publishing reasons, we got it out before it was Reactified. And I think I'm going to like make that like not an SPA, but like an SSPA. You know, like that area of the site will have client-side routing, or at least I'm going to give it the old college try, you know. We'll see. I'm not going to like code split it, but it'll be one of the first examples of like URL changing in CodePen that's not a full refresh.
We'll get there eventually.
Heck yeah, we will. I'm excited. I like the routing thing, but we've already, you know, we've thought ahead to that point. Like, yes, we do want to do as much routing as we can and conditional rendering based on URL. Like the idea of like, if it was being done on Rails, but it could be done in JavaScript, let's move it. Let's get it out of there. Let's, you know, let's not set some variable in Rails that turns into a global variable on the window, and we use that for our conditional rendering. It's like, let's move away from that. Let's get this. This is a JavaScript stack now. Let's freaking make it JavaScript. And it's great. So here's the final thing I'll talk about that's been on my mind or whatever, is this idea that now that I feel so powerful, and hopefully we all feel powerful in what we're able to do, Rach is always powerful.
Yeah, I got that.
That there's new things on my shoulders that I didn't have to think of all the time. And there's probably lots of great front-end developers out there that just never deal with this because they work on a Craft CMS site or a WordPress site or a traditional Rails site or something or even a fancy Gatsby site or a React site that it has some, you know, is using Next.js or something that has server-side rendering on it. When you use server-side rendering at all, that's, I guess I should have started with that. Like, if you're using a server-side rendered app, mostly the HTML just arrives in one big package and you leave it to the browser to lay out that page as it will. And that is complicated enough. It is. That's a massively complicated thing. The HTML arrives. There's render blocking resources and not render blocking resources. And how optimized are those assets? And are they all running on the main thread or not? And blah, blah, blah. There's just a million things to think about. We have to think about all that same stuff. And then in addition to that, well, our HTML didn't arrive fully formed. There's some blank divs in our HTML because we're not doing server-side rendering everywhere. And so when those blank divs come in with some stuff that isn't blank divs, we really need to like get our CSS right so that there's placeholder stuff there and that then the JavaScript executes and it makes a query to our database, gets that data, and then renders what it needs to. And we have all these choices now. Like, do we want to render something before that query is done? Do we want to render a placeholder while it's doing that query or not? And then, or do we want to just wait and not render anything at all until the query's there? So that's one of the reasons we have this like middleman query component, so that we have some choices we can pass in there. But that's certainly like new weight for the front-end developer's shoulder to think about, yeah?
Right. Well, because you don't want to, for example, one thing that we talked about recently was you don't want to make it so because you haven't loaded the user yet, you don't know if you should render login or sign up buttons or a blank user avatar or something. But if you render one thing, then that means that there will be a shift in where the buttons are, and then people might accidentally click on something that's not supposed to be there. It's a lot of like figuring out how do we make it as seamless as possible and seem server-side rendered and smooth, while also rendering the correct thing and not just giving people a blank page until everything is done.
Yes, that's a challenge. The nice thing about, you know, GraphQL is you have your little component and what it's concerned with, and it just loads that in, and then you're like, cool, render that when that data comes in. But when you combine like 20 of these, the effect, if you're not sort of thinking about the loading of the page holistically, it's, you can have this situation where you, for example, could have like 30 different spinners, and then if things are all just like popping in, pop, you know, like all shifting and stuff, which is really jarring way to load a web page. So you have to sort of think sort of top-down strategy of like, okay, what data do we need for, you know, when, what part of the page do we want to load, and when do we need to wait for data in other components before we render? That sort of decision making is unique to this
it's
situation.
It's so tempting to be like, oh, here's a set of principles that we use. Our query component just returns a spinner until, like you were saying, it just returns a spinner until the data is there, you know? And oh my gosh, have you seen apps like that? Yeah. It's downright embarrassing.
Nobody really likes that whole looked. Like, oh, there's a spinner in every component on this page.
I think it would have very serious implications on CodePen. I think people would be like, what the hell did you
do? Yeah, we'd have definitely have like the web design police like rung up like 911 CodePen are client-side rendering everything now. Like, we'd definitely get dobbed on like immediately. So the aim is to make people to not let people realize that that's what's happening, because people have very strong feelings about things being rendered on the client.
Which we just revealed it on a podcast, so they're coming.
Yeah. You know, we do get one of the finer passes, I think, in this conversation, you know, like people hand it to us readily, is the idea that because CodePen is an app for writing JavaScript, it's like, of course JavaScript needs to run. Of course, you know, like it's just not optional.
We don't have to worry about if that. If you've got JavaScript turned off, then I'm not really sure what you're doing on CodePen. You're gonna have a bad time. Here.
Well, and then there's our blog or something. Like, I'm not gonna rewrite our blog to be entirely client side rendered. It's WordPress site. It just does that. That's fine. But the app itself, yes, there's a good chance that someday CodePen is entirely client-side rendered, the whole thing. And we might use server-side rendering if there's some other benefits to speed or SEO or whatever, even though I'm not totally convinced by any of that. Yet, I'm just saying I'm open-minded to the possibilities here. I'm just saying there's a good chance that we are a client-side app, and it's just... It's the stack is perfect. It's like it was designed for us. It's like if any app in the world should be a React app, it's CodePen or Vue or whatever. But we picked React, and I'm not sad about it.
I'm glad we did React. Vue is great, but I think we've got a lot more robust community resources with React for what we're doing.
You heard it here first.
Yeah.
Cassidy signs off on React Joy. All right, fantastic. Thanks for chatting with me. And this was, I guess, our first public announcement of the tech stack we're using there. Not that I know some people care, so enjoy people that care and ignore us, people that don't. Till next time, bye-bye.
Bye.
Seven six zero three one eight six.